One step forward. Read. The weight of the knife was heavy in my palm, solid, the blade balanced and sharp. I'd purchased it from one of the finest smiths in Caesarine, a smith who had later consorted to kill my wife with a couple of criminals. Blue pig, he'd spat after I had given him to the authorities. In all our years of business, I hadn't known he despised me. Just like the farmers in Saint-Loire. All because of my uniform. No, that wasn't true. All because of me. My beliefs. Golden stars took up most of the spinning board. Leather cuffs hung from four strategic points on the circular wood, two for an assistant's hands and two for their feet. The top of the board had been stained with something that looked suspiciously like blood. With a half-hearted flick of my wrist, I threw my knife. It lodged dead center. Devereaux erupted into applause.
Well, that was quite extraordinary, Monsieur Diggory, really. Louise wasn't fibbing when she spoke of your bladed prowess.
He fanned himself for a moment.
Ah, the crowd will positively exalt your performance. The dagger of danger, we shall call you. No, no, knife strife.
I stared at him, alarmed. I don't think...
Oh, you're right, of course. We have not yet found the perfect appellation. Never fear, together we shall...
His hands shot skyward, abruptly, fingers splayed, as if framing a portrait.
Three-fingered red? It takes three fingers to perform, yes?
Any more and it would just be uncomfortable.
Lounging behind us on a spangled blanket, Beau laughed. The remains of his lunch littered the ground beside him.
Might I suggest Le Petit Jésus as an alternative?
Stop! I took a deep breath through my nose. Heat worked up my throat, and even to me the word sounded tired. I'd thought to use the break in travel to practice, an egregious lapse in judgment. I don't need a stage name.
My dear, dear boy,
Devereaux clutched his chest as if I'd insulted his mother.
Whatever else shall we call you? We cannot simply announce you as Reed Diggory.
He flapped a hand, swatting away my protests.
The Coron, dear boy, just think of the Coron. You need a name, an identity, to whisk the audience into their fantasy.
His hand stilled, mid-swipe, and his eyes lit with excitement.
The Red Death,
he said with relish. My heartbeat faltered.
That's it, the clear winner, the obvious selection. Come one, come all, to witness the horrible, the hellacious, the handsome Red Death.
Beau doubled over with laughter. I nearly threw another knife at him.
I prefer Raoul. Nonsense, I have clearly articulated my feelings on the name Raoul.
Devereaux dropped his hands. The feather on his hat bobbed in agitation.
Never fear, I have every confidence the honorific shall grow on you, but perhaps a respite is in order in the meantime. We might instead outfit you both for your grand debut.
Beau rose hastily to his elbows.
I told you I won't be on stage.
Everyone in the company must model the appropriate attire, Your Highness, even those collecting tickets and tips from the audience. You understand, I'm sure.
Beau fell backward with a groan.
That's a spirit.
From his sleeve, Devereaux pulled a measuring tape.
Now, I'll just need a few measurements, a negligible amount, really, and all will be set. May I?
He gestured to my arm. When I nodded, he stepped into my space, engulfing me in the scent of wine. That explained a lot.
For the remainder of our journey, he prattled, unfurling his tape, might I suggest you bunk with the twins in the amber wagon? Your mother may join you. Your brother, however, may better suit the scarlet wagon with Zena and Seraphine. Though I sleep little, I will accompany him there.
He chortled at an unspoken joke.
I've been told Zena and Seraphine are the fiercest of snorers.
I would be better suited to Zena and Seraphine's wagon.
I could hear the smirk in Beau's voice.
How perceptive you are, Claude.
He barked a laugh. Oh, no, dear boy. I fear if romance is what you seek, you shall be markedly disappointed. Zena's and Seraphine's very souls are intertwined. Cosmic, I tell you.
Beau's expression flattened, and he looked away, muttering about piss-poor luck.
Why the sleeping arrangements?
I asked suspiciously.
After bidding Lou goodbye, I'd spent the remainder of the night riding up front with Claude. He'd tried to pass the time with conversation. When I hadn't kept up my end, he'd started to sing, and I'd regretted my grave error. For hours.
"You're quite contrary, aren't you, Mr. Diggory? Quite prickly."
He peered up at me with a curious expression before dropping to measure my inseam.
"'Tis nothing nefarious, I assure you. I simply think it wise for you to consider pursuing a friendship with our dear Toulouse and Terry."
Again, why?
"You might have more in common with them than you think."
I glanced over my shoulder at Beau. He frowned at Devereaux.
"That's not cryptic at all."
Devereaux sighed and stood once more, patting the mud from his corduroy trousers. Violet corduroy trousers.
"If I might be frank, messieurs," he turned to me, "you have recently suffered a rather traumatic event and are in desperate need of platonic companionship. Your forefather is gone. Your brotherhood has abandoned you. Your self-loathing has cleaved a physical and emotional cleft between you and your wife. More important, it has cleaved a cleft within yourself."
Sharp, hot anger spiked through me at the unexpected reprimand. "You don't even know me."
"Perhaps not. But I do know you don't know yourself. I know you cannot know another until you do."
He snapped his fingers in front of my nose.
"I know you need to wake up, young man, lest you leave this world without finding that which you truly seek."
I glared at him, the beginning of shame flushing my neck, my ears.
"And what's that?"
"Connection," he said simply, spinning his tape into a tidy roll. "We all seek it. Except yourself, except others. And you just might find it."
"Now," he turned on his booted heel, smiling cheerily over his shoulder,
"I suggest you partake in your midday meal. We soon continue to Domaine La Rose, where you shall woo the crowd with your knife-wielding prowess. Ta-ta!"
He strode off, whistling a merry tune. Beau snorted in the ensuing silence.
"I like him. He's mad. All the best ones are."
His words sparked others, sharper ones now. Words that bit and snapped within my mind, seeking blood.
"Claude is a collector of sorts," Zena had said. "He adds only the best and brightest talent to his troop. The rare and unusual. The exceptional."
My suspicion deepened. His curious look, his meaningful smile. Was it possible he knew my secret? Did he know what I'd done on Modrinet? It wasn't likely, and yet Morgane knew. I wasn't fool enough to believe she'd keep that knowledge to herself. When it best suited her purposes, she'd reveal it, and I would burn. And perhaps I deserved to burn. I'd taken life. I'd played God. No. I retreated from my spiraling thoughts, breathing deeply, marshaling my mind into order, into silence. It lasted only seconds before another unwelcome question crept in. If Devereaux did know, did that mean, were the twins also witches?
"You might have more in common with them than you think."
Scoffing, I unsheathed another knife. In all my years around magic, in all Lou's years around it, we'd never heard of another male witch. To stumble upon two others this quickly after Modrinet was the least likely possibility of all. No, less than unlikely, absurd.
"Claude is a collector of sorts."
Closing my eyes, I focused on emptying my mind of thought. Such speculation did little good. I had one purpose now, to protect Lou, to protect my unknown brothers and sisters. I couldn't know them if they were dead. I breathed in through my nose, out through my mouth, retreated to my fortress, relished the darkness of my lids. It didn't matter if the twins were witches. It didn't matter if Devereaux knew I was one. Because I wasn't a witch if I didn't practice. I wasn't a witch. Heedless of my conviction, gold flickered to life in the darkness, and there, soft at first, so soft I nearly missed them, voices began to hum.
Seek us. Seek us. Seek us.
My eyes snapped open. When Beau cleared his throat behind me, I jumped, nearly dropping my knife.
You aren't seriously planning on strapping your mother to that board, are you?
He asked.
You could decapitate her.
In response, I hurled the knife end over end toward the center of the board. It sank deep beside the first one.
Now you're just posturing.
He rose from his blanket, stepped to my side for a better view. To my surprise, he tugged another knife from my bandolier, studying it in his hand. Then he threw it. It thudded against the board like a dead fish before falling to the ground. A bit of silence passed.
It would seem,
Beau straightened his coat with as much dignity as he could muster,
I'm shit at this.
I snorted despite myself. The knot in my chest loosened.
Was there ever any doubt?
A self-deprecating grin broke over his face, and he pushed my shoulder half-heartedly. Though tall, he stood a couple of inches shorter than me.
When's your birthday?
I blurted. He arched a black brow, so different from my own.
The 9th of August. I'm 21 years old. Why?
No reason.
I'm older than you, if that's what you're wondering.
I wasn't, and you're not.
Come now, little brother. I told you my birthday. It's only fair you reciprocate.
When I didn't answer, his grin spread.
Your silence is damning. You really are younger, aren't you?
Pushing his hand from my shoulder, I stalked toward the amber wagon. My neck burned. Cots lined the walls inside, built above and below storage shelves like pieces of a puzzle. Pillows overflowed, though threadbare, silk and velvet and satin covered each of them. Trunks had been shoved in the corners, along with a battered rack of costumes and a half-dressed mannequin. My chest twisted. It reminded me of Soleil et Lune's attic. Except for the incense. Frankincense and myrrh burned within a small porcelain pot. The smoke funneled out through a hole in the roof. I hurled the entire pot outside into the snow.
Easy there.
Beau dodged the projectile, following me into the wagon.
Have the resins personally offended you?
Again, I didn't answer. He didn't need to know it reminded me of the cathedral, of him. I collapsed onto the nearest cot, tossing my bag to my feet, rummaging for a dry shirt. When my hand caught instead on my journal, I pulled it out, trailed my fingers across the worn cover, flipped through the crinkled pages. Though perhaps I'd been foolish to pack such a sentimental token, I hadn't been able to leave it behind. Absently, I paused at my last entry, the evening I'd visited the king after burning Estelle. My father. I traced the words on the page, not truly seeing them. I'd done my best not to think of him, but now his face crept back into my thoughts. Golden hair, strong jaw, piercing eyes, and a smile that disarmed all who looked upon it. He wielded it like a blade, no, a deadlier weapon still. A blade could not disarm his enemies, but his smile could. As a chasseur, I'd seen it from afar my entire life. Only when he'd invited me to dine with him had I witnessed it personally. He'd smiled at me the entire night. And despite Lou writhing alone in my bed, burning alive for her sister's sin, I'd felt seen, appreciated, special. Beau had inherited that smile. I had not. Before I could lose my nerve, I asked, "What do our sisters look like, Violette and Victoire?" Beau paused in examining the contents of the nearest trunk. I couldn't see his face. If my abrupt question surprised him, he didn't say.
They look like me, I suppose.
Like our mother?
She hails from an island across the sea. It's a beautiful kingdom. Tropical. Much warmer than this nonsense.
He waved a hand toward the snow outside before plucking a crystal orb from the nearest trunk.
They're twins, you know. Prettier than my mother and me. Long black hair and blacker eyes, not a blemish on either of their faces. Like paintings. And my father treats them as such. That's why you've never seen them. They're rarely allowed outside the castle walls.
How old are they?
13. What are they?
I leaned forward eagerly.
What are they like? Do they read, ride horses, play with swords?
He turned and smiled that smile then. But it looked different on him. Genuine.
If by play you mean bash their big brother over the head, then yes, they like to play with swords.
He eyed the journal in my hand.
And Violette likes to write and read. Victoire not so much. She prefers to chase cats and terrorize the staff.
A warmth I'd never known spread through me at the picture he painted. A warmth I hardly recognized. It wasn't anger or humiliation or shame. It was something else, something happy.
It hurt. And our father?
I asked quietly.
What's he like?
Beau's smile faded then, and he dropped the lute he'd been plucking back into the trunk. His eyes narrowed as he faced me fully.
You know what he's like. Don't paint us like a fairy tale, Reed. We aren't one.
Closing my journal with more force than necessary, I pushed to my feet.
I know that. I've...
I exhaled hard and threw caution to the winds.
I've never had a family. And you still don't.
He shook his head in exasperation, eyeing me as if I were a stupid child in need of admonishment.
I should have known you'd do this. I should have known you'd want a bond.
Stepping closer, he stuck a finger in my chest.
Listen carefully, little brother. This isn't a family, it's a noose. And if this brilliant plan of yours goes awry, we'll all swing from it. You, me, Violette, Victoire, and every other poor bastard our father has fucked into existence.
He paused, and his expression softened infinitesimally before hardening once more. He kicked open the wagon door.
Make peace with it now, or we'll break your heart.
He left without another word.
The sway of wheels woke me.
Groggy, disoriented, I jolted from my cot. My head pounded, doubly so when I cracked it against the shelf overhead, and my neck ached. I rubbed it with a muttered curse.
Sleep well?
Madame Lebel regarded me over the brim of her teacup. Jade with gold filigree. The scent of spiced pears pervaded the wagon. Mulled perry, then, not tea. It rippled with each roll of the wheels. Late afternoon sunlight filtered in through the window, as did Devereaux's cheery whistle.
What time is it?
I asked.
Around 4 o'clock. You've been asleep for hours. I didn't want to wake you.
She offered me a second cup, along with a small smile.
Would you like some? I'm quite partial to Perry after a long nap. Perhaps you are too?
A hopeful question. A transparent one. When I didn't answer, she prattled on, spinning her own cup in her hands, around and around, a restless gesture.
My mother brewed it for me when I was a girl. A grove of pear trees grew in the valley near the chateau, and it was our secret place. We'd harvest the fruit at the end of summertime and hide them all over the chateau, waiting for them to ripen.
Her grin broadened as she looked up at me.
And we'd weave the blossoms into crowns, necklaces, rings. Once I even made Morgan a cape of them. It was glorious. Her mother, Louise's grandmother, organized a dance that May Day, just so she could wear it.
I'm allergic to pears.
I wasn't, but I'd heard enough. Her smile fell.
Of course, forgive me, perhaps some tea instead?
I don't like tea.
Her eyes narrowed. Coffee?
No.
Wine? Mead? Beer?
I don't drink alcohol.
She set her cup down with an angry clink.
As you're sitting healthy and whole before me, I presume you drink something. Pray tell me what it is, so I might indulge you.
Water.
She downright scowled then, abandoning her saccharine act. With a wave of her hand over the pot of perry, the spiced scent in the air vanished. The sharp bite of magic replaced it. Mouth pursed, she poured crystal clear water into my cup, pushed it roughly toward me. My gut twisted, and I crushed my palms against my eyes.
I told you. I don't want to be around.
Yes, yes, she snapped. You've developed a renewed aversion to magic. I understand. One step forward, two steps back, and all that rubbish. I'm here to give you a gentle push back in the right direction. Or a not-so-gentle one, if necessary.
I fell back to my pillow, turning away from her. I'm not interested.
The next second, water doused the side of my face, my hair, my shoulder. And I am not finished, she said calmly. Spluttering, pushing aside my sopping hair, I lurched upright once more to seize control of the conversation.
The men in the tavern knew I'm the king's bastard. How?
She shrugged delicately. I have contacts in the city. I requested they spread the word far and wide.
Why?
To save your life. She arched a brow. The more people who knew, the more likely it was to reach Auguste, and it did. You're wanted alive, not dead. Once he discovered the connection, I knew he'd want to see you again, to study you. Your father is nothing if not vain, and children make impeccable mirrors.
You're insane.
That is not a polite word, she sniffed and smoothed her skirts, folded her hands in her lap, especially in light of Louise's new situation. Do you call her insane?
No.
I forced my clenched teeth apart.
And you don't either.
She waved her hand. Enough. You've made it perfectly clear you don't desire a friendship with me, which is fortunate indeed, as you're in desperate need of not a friend, but a parent. It is to that end I now speak. We will not defeat Morgan without magic. I understand you've had two less than ideal experiences with it, but the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. You must put aside your fear, or you will kill us all. Do you understand? And her tone, imperious, sanctimonious, anger tore through me, sharp and jagged as shattered glass. How dare she speak to me like a petulant child? How dare she presume to parent me? Magic is death and madness. I wrung out my shirt, stalking to join her at the table, tripping over my bag in the process, swearing viciously at the tight quarters. I want no part of it. There is more in this earth than in all your heaven and hell, yet you remain blind. I have said it before, and I will say it again. Open your eyes, Reed. Magic is not your enemy. Indeed, if we are to persuade Toulouse and Terry into an alliance, I dare say you'll need to be rather less critical. I paused, with a fresh cup of water to my lips.
What?
She regarded me shrewdly over her own cup. The entire purpose of this endeavor is to procure allies, and two powerful ones have just landed in our lap. Morgan will not expect them. What Morgan does not expect, Morgan cannot manipulate.
We don't know they're witches,
I muttered. Use that thick head of yours, son, before it falls from your shoulders.
Don't call me son.
I've heard of Claude Devereux in my travels. What lovely Zena professed is true. He surrounds himself with the exceptional, the talented, the powerful. I met a woman in Amandine years ago who performed with Troupe de Fortune. Rumor had it she could...
Is there a point to this?
The point is that Toulouse and Terry Saint-Martin, probably even Zena and Seraphine, are not what they appear. No one batted an eye when Lou revealed herself as a witch. They were far more concerned with you as a chasseur, which means someone in this troupe practices magic. Claude wants you to befriend Toulouse and Terry, yes?
You might have more in common with them than you think.
I forced a nod.
Excellent. Do it.
Shaking my head, I downed the rest of the water. As if it were that simple. As if I could disguise my disdain for magic and charm them into a false friendship. Lou could have done it. The thought curdled in my gut. But I could neither forget that look in her eye at the pub, nor the way she'd removed my balisarda to control me. I couldn't forget the feel of the Archbishop's blood on my hand, my ex-brethren's blood, my chest tightened, magic. I don't care if the Saint-Martins are witches. My lip curled, and I pushed away from the table. We'd stop for dinner soon. I'd suffer even Devereaux's singing to escape this conversation. I have no intention of bonding with any of you.
Oh? Her eyes flashed. She, too, sprang to her feet. You seemed intent on bonding with Beauregard. You seem to care a great deal about Violette and Victoire. How do I earn such coveted treatment?
I cursed my own carelessness. She'd been listening. Of course she'd been listening, filthy eavesdropper, and I'd shown her my soft underbelly.
You don't. You abandoned me.
In her eyes, our last moment on Mudrinit unfolded. Those thousand moments. I shoved them all aside.
I thought we'd moved past this, she said softly.
I stared at her in disgust. Yes, I'd given her peace with her last breath. But that gift, it had been for me, too. She'd been dying. I couldn't spend the rest of my life haunting a ghost. So I'd let her go. I'd let it all go, the pain, the bitterness, the regret. Except she hadn't died. She hadn't left. And now she haunted me instead. And some hurt couldn't stay buried. How does one move past being left to die in a garbage bin?
How many times must I tell you I didn't?
She shook her head, color heightened and eyes overbright, tearful. Whether angry or sad, I didn't know. Her voice was small, however, as she continued.
I am sorry, Reed. You've led a tumultuous life. And the blame, in part, is mine. I know this. I understand my role in your suffering.
Catching my hand, she rose to her feet. I told myself to pull away. I didn't.
Now, you must understand that if given the choice, I never would have left you. I would have forsaken everything, my home, my sisters, my life, to keep you. But I cannot change the past. I cannot protect you from its pain. I can protect you here and now, however. If you let me.
If you let me. The words were living things in my ears. Though I tried to bury them, they took root, suffocating my anger, swathing my sorrow, enveloping it, enveloping me. I felt warm, unsteady, like lashing out and railing against her, like falling down and clutching her skirt. How many times had I wished for a parent to protect me, to love me, though I'd never admitted it, never would admit it. The Archbishop, he hadn't been...
No! It was too much.
I pulled away from her, sinking onto my cot, staring at nothing. A moment of silence passed. It might have been uncomfortable, it might have been tense, I didn't notice.
I love pears,
I finally mumbled, near incoherent. She still heard. The next second, she'd pressed a hot cup of perry into my hands. Then, she went for the kill.
If you wish to defeat Morgan, Reed, if you wish to protect Louise, you must do what is necessary. I am not asking you to practice magic. I am asking you to tolerate it. Toulouse and Terry will never join us if you scorn their very existence. Just
Get to know them. After a second of hesitation, she added, For Louise. For yourself, she'd wanted to say. I stared into the Perry, feeling sick, before lifting it to my lips. The steaming liquid burned all the way down.